Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks very much for tuning in this evening. I had an odd feeling today. I'm homesick for the boat. If you were on the cruise, you know what I'm talking about. I'm just homesick for the boat. Mensa Man came out swinging today, didn't he? Did you watch some of that on television? Whew. He spent some time scolding the Democrats for not pushing to pass his fascist agenda, the parts he wants. The other parts he will veto and be damn proud of it. He refused to answer questions about Israeli airstrikes against Syria. He claimed memory loss over events in the early 80s, probably the only factual, correct, true thing he's ever said. In the early 80s, this guy was coked out of his skull. He expressed his pleasure at the progress in Iraq and pretended not to know that Vladimir Putin is getting friendly with Iran. In a nutshell, he made it very clear that he is at least as deluded as ever and slipping further over the brink and into the nearest straitjacket. So you know what that means. Moron sounds on the program tonight, coming up in a few moments. I'm sorry, I don't mean to upset you with sounds of this freak, but where else are you going to hear it, right? Where else are you going to hear it, indeed? Oh, and about the Bush and the Dalai Lama, was that today when the Dalai Lama got this a Freedom Medal or whatever? I have no problem with the Dalai Lama because he's a Buddhist, which means he's an atheist, which means he tries to see the good inside of human beings, even some murderous bastard like Bush. But one would think, at least I would think, there might be a little reciprocity there, that Bush would have some valid moral or ethical reason for setting up such an elaborate photo op with the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhists. But knowing George W. Bush the way we all know him, we understand what this is all about, don't we? This had nothing to do with spiritualism or spirituality. I guess I should put it that way so you don't think I'm talking about ghosts. Has nothing to do with spirituality. Has nothing to do with global peace. Has nothing to do about finding the inner core of human beings wherein resides that little flame of goodness. Has nothing to do with that. Do you know what Bush's whole photo op with the Dalai Lama was all about? Well, of course. Sticking a finger into the eye of Red China. That's all. That's all it was about. The Chinese have made it very clear, being the fascist murderers that they are, they just figured another fascist murderer, in this case George W. Bush, would respond. This would be that this is very similar to the Chinese cutting oil deals with the Iranians. Oops, wait a minute, they've already done that. But Bush is no more interested in the Dalai Lama than I'm interested in little people running around the moons of Jupiter. But it was a grand way, wasn't it? It gives him lots of cover. Well, what am I doing? I'm just here giving a medal to a spiritual person. Oh, the Chinese don't like it? Well, I'd say what I could want to say about the Chinese, but I'd get thrown off Malloy's show, so I'm not going to say it. But it starts with an F. That's what this was all about. a finger in the eye. Meantime, the Democrats over in the House or the Senate, for some ungodly reason, decided to pass a resolution about the slaughter of Armenians back at the end of the Ottoman Empire. Dear Jesus, at World War I. Oh, yeah, that's what we need. Sure, pass it. Whether it's right or wrong, up or down, and please don't send me emails now. If you're Armenian descent, I understand. I know the story. Don't. Please, if you're of Turkish descent, don't. But timing is 90% of everything, right? So is the Democrats egged on by the Republicans? Oh, I know. Let's pass a resolution condemning Turkey just at the moment when the Turks are ready to invade Iraq. That'll be fun. We live in a rubber bungalow. Do you ever? So when word came down, when the Turks said, okay, bring our ambassador home. Now, all this happened while I was on Das Boot, so I didn't find out about this until I came home. But the Turks recall their ambassador, and the word goes out. You know, the only Muslim democracy in on the planet? I don't know. Don't send me an email about that either, because I frankly don't care. But I know that Turkey is a member of NATO. I know that Turkey has tried to stay away from the religious nutballs that exist within the Muslim faith in their country. So what better way to promote good relations with Turkey? Yeah, pass a resolution that says these evil rabbis. See, this is the thing. Apparently Pelosi and Reid and whoever else involved in this do not understand that in the United States, our collective historical memory goes back, if we're lucky, to Anna Nicole's death date. Anything beyond that doesn't count. It didn't happen. Whereas people in other parts of the world remember things for centuries, for millennia. You son of a bitch, your family impaled my people in the year 800. I'll get you for that. So, Bush and the Dalai Lama. Bat squeeze. U.S. Congress and Armenian genocide. Incredible. No, I'm not giving the raspberry to the genocide. Of course it happened. Letter to the editor today in the New York Times. Was it not yesterday? Titled On the Gore Effect, the Nobel and the Politics. To the editor, in 1980, four physicians, all of us at Harvard, joined three of our Soviet colleagues to co-found the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. The group won the 1985 Nobel Peace Prize for alerting the world to what would happen to people and to our planet in the event of a nuclear war. By giving its 2007 Peace Prize to Al Gore and the International Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the Nobel Committee has warned us of a new global threat in magnitude and in the duration of its impact comparable to nuclear war, but one that is harder for most people to recognize. Global climate change is Armageddon in slow motion, dangerously altering the atmosphere, land, oceans, and life on Earth, including human life, in incremental steps. As Al Gore and the panel have told us with great authority, there's no longer any serious scientific debate about the catastrophic consequences we will face if we continue our unsustainable burning of fossil fuels. The Nobel Committee gives its Peace Prize not only to recognize outstanding achievement on behalf of humanity, but also to catalyze positive action toward a better world for us all. We must hope this much-deserved award awakens people everywhere to address global climate change with the urgency it demands, starting now. It's signed Eric Chivian, MD, who is the director of the Center for Health and the Global Environment, Harvard Medical School. Now, when you compare that letter to the frothing and stench coming from the mouths of the right wingers who are just wetting their pants and pulling their hair because Al Gore won a Nobel Peace Prize. shared in the winning of the Nobel Peace Prize. It's astonishing. It's astonishing how far removed from sanity and reality the right wing really is. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The globe is warming.
Past the hour. I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here listening to the man. Two emails here real quick. This is from Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Sometimes I wonder if I never see the forest because I'm so busy looking at the trees. But here's Kathy writing, Mike, is this, the Turkey, Iraq, and the Armenians, the resolution. Mike, is this possibly a ploy by Democrats? Remember when France condemned them, when France condemned the Turks for this genocide, Turkey cut off ties to France. If Turkey cuts off ties to us, they're likely to deny us the ability to wage war in Iraq because most of what we send into Iraq comes through Turkey. So, are the Democrats smart enough to use this so-called genocide pronouncement to help stop the war? No. Quick answer, Kathy, no. But you may, I don't know, who knows anymore? I don't know. You may be right. I saw something on the news tonight. Yes, moment of weakness. I had on, I don't know which one. They're all the same. No question about that. But something like 70-some percent of our materiel to continue our occupation of this poor, sad country comes through Turkey. And, yeah, all the Turks didn't. When Bush launched this filthy war and occupation, didn't the Turks deny us the use of their airspace? Yeah, I think they did. We'll have a little bit more on that, about Turkey a little later in the program. And this comes from Bob. Have you been to his website, superbeans.com? Occasionally I toss out a website that I find very, 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 very intriguing and interesting. And this is one of them. Super Beans, just what I'm saying. It's a coffee, Kona coffee, Hawaiian. Superbeans.com. Check out his website. But here's what he writes. Mike, listen to your show last night. Liked your segment of a general strike. I, too, wonder if enough people will do anything about it. But I know if I do nothing, my inaction will be mirrored millions of times over. If I do something, then perhaps those actions will be mirrored millions of times over. As I told my daughter last night, if we do nothing, we guarantee nothing will happen. So, my monthly coffee newsletter, the Super Bean Spamorama, has gone out to my 7,819 customers. I'm a founding member of Nova M, so I could download the segment of your show last night. I put the clip on my General Strike page, and I hope your forcefulness will help convince my customers to just stop. You said, if this thing develops, I won't come to work that day. I'll declare right goddamn now. I won't be here. I will not be here on November 7th. If there is some support to make this happen, I will not be here. That's what you said last night. And then you went on to question if the American people are ready for a general strike. Me too. A blogger wrote, if outrage can get 60,000 people to Gina, Louisiana in 3 weeks, then surely outrage can get as many or more to say hell no to this war on November 6th and beyond. This thing doesn't have a leader so far, Bob writes. There doesn't seem to be a centralized website for it. It's being passed along through the internet. General strike November 6th, just bubbling around out there. The trick is to tell everybody about it. I've emailed my coffee customers, so they're 7,819. I've told my immediate family and friends, so add another 7. I'm tapped out. And you've got a microphone. You reach many more people than I can. You said, if there's some support to make this happen, I will not be here. What if you mention the general strike once per show between now and Election Day? Tell everyone to read Garrett Kaiser's article on Harper's website, harpers.org. Tell everyone once per show to just stop it on November 6th. Don't go to work, don't go to school, and don't buy anything. I believe that if you do that, the support you're looking for might be there. If you and the other progressive radio folk talked about a general strike and told your listeners to tell everybody they know about the strike, I have absolutely no idea what will happen on November 6th. Except if someone were to go to superbeans.com that day, they'd see a sign that said, closed on account of fascism. Bob. Oh, God. All right. We're going to have to let Nova M Radio know that on November 6th, I'm not going to be here. It's one thing to sit behind this microphone all the time and bitch and complain. It's something else to take some action. So we're going to have to get word to management that on November 6th, what is that, a Tuesday? You got a calendar out there? On November 6th, this could cause a problem between me and Nova M. I hope not. Maybe they can run a rerun. I don't think any progressive talk show hosts would like to substitute for me, knowing the reason I won't be here. I can't see Sam doing it. I can't see Peter Werby doing it. Okay. Bob, you got it. On November 6th, I will not be here. It'll be my way of saying no. No, I've had enough.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour, quick email here from Roz, and we're going to listen to some sounds from the House of Horrors. That is the White House press room today. From Roz, Mike, did you actually see Bush doing his Q&A today? He was the picture of childish vindictiveness, petulance, and spite. His face was twitching and his lips tight. His obvious contempt for having to be there and address the peasants was more than obvious. He's pure evil mixed with stupidity. He was rude, arrogant, and wouldn't answer any questions satisfactorily. He addressed the reporters as though they were children and was generally obnoxious. In other words, he was his usual idiot self. God, I hate that man. I don't think I could keep my cool if I was one of those reporters. Did you hear him say, "This ain't my first rodeo"? What a stupid hick, and the more angry and confused he gets, the thicker the hokey cowboy accent becomes. It was a totally embarrassing experience watching him. In the end, I just had to turn it off. Roz. Okay, let us begin. Roll up your pants legs, take off your good shoes. Have the sterilizer bottle ready for when we walk out of this muck. But here we go. Raisin Brain held a press conference today to scold the Democratic Congress for not passing his agenda. That he will then signify his refusal to follow if the occasion warrants it. Talk about guts. This is from the opening statement.
We're now more than halfway through October, and the new leaders in Congress have had more than 9 months to get things done for the American people.
Oh.
Tomorrow Congress will hold a vote attempting to override my veto of the S-chip bill. It's unlikely that that override vote will succeed.
Arrogant bastard.
Which Congress knew when they sent me the bill. One of the things Congress did manage to get done this year is pass legislation that began modernizing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Modernizing?
FISA is a law that our intelligence professionals use to monitor the communications of terrorists.
Anyone who disagrees with you.
Who want to do harm to our people.
Anyone who disagrees with you, right?
The problem is that Congress arranged for the measure they passed to expire this coming February.
Oh, damn.
In addition, the House is now considering another FISA bill that would weaken the reforms they approved just 2 months ago.
They're crazy, aren't they, George?
When it comes to improving FISA, Congress needs to move forward, not backward.
Oh!
Congress has work to do on trade.
Yeah!
Earlier this year, my administration reached out to the Congress,
and
we forged
finger.
A bipartisan agreement to advance trade legislation.
Yeah!
Now Congress needs to begin moving on trade agreements with Peru, Colombia, Panama, and South Korea.
Yeah, we aren't sending enough of our jobs overseas yet. Come on, you sons of bitches. Hee-haw! Hit 'em up and... Or round them up and hit them out. Come on, boys!
The new leaders in Congress have had more than 9 months to get things done for the American people. The old leaders in Congress, chuckle nuts, had 7 years to get things done for the American people. And what did they do? Nothing.
But I agree with you, chuckle nuts. 9 months and the sons of bitches should have started impeachment against you and your bravo.
Bit more finger wagging before he took questions from the press. Notice I said took questions. I didn't say he answered them. But listen now to the irony of his statement about
the Ottoman Empire.
You know what he thinks the Ottoman Empire is? A factory in North Carolina where they make things to put in front of your couch so you can put your feet up. Not only is this totally out of sync with the rest of his speech, it is so blatantly hypocritical it makes me want to random my garments. Listen up, as in the immortal phrase of Simple Scotty. Listen up as the blame gaming continues.
Congress has not sent me a single appropriations bill.
What about the war?
They also need to pass the remaining spending bills one at a time and in a fiscally responsible way.
Oh, sure.
Congress has work to do on housing.
Yes, sir.
Back in August, I proposed a series of reforms to help homeowners struggling with their mortgage payments. More than 6 weeks later, Congress has yet to finish work on any of these measures.
Bastards.
These are sensible reforms that would help American families stay in their homes, and Congress needs to act quickly.
On what?
On these proposals.
Oh, okay.
Congress has work to do for our military veterans.
Yeah, you care about that.
Yesterday, I sent Congress legislation to implement the Dole Shalala Commission's recommendations that would modernize and improve our system of care for wounded warriors.
Near and dear to your heart.
Congress should consider this legislation promptly so that those injured while defending our freedom can get the quality care they deserve.
Oh, my God.
With all these pressing responsibilities.
Yeah?
One thing Congress should not be doing is sorting out the historical record of the Ottoman Empire.
And people that make them cushions.
The resolution on the mass killings of Armenians beginning in 1915 is counterproductive.
That's right.
Both Republicans and Democrats, including every living former Secretary of State, have spoken out against this resolution.
Like Henry Kissinger.
Congress has more important work to do than antagonizing a Democratic ally in the Muslim world.
What? Congress...
He said that, didn't he? Congress has more important work to do than antagonizing a Democratic ally in the Muslim world. Yeah, that's your job. Forget the Democratic ally. Turkey comes close, I guess. What do I know about Turkey? I don't know. I know their Congress passed a resolution today saying let's go in and stomp the hell out of the Iraqis. Well, the Kurds. But Bush all of a sudden is concerned about antagonizing some country in the Muslim world? Oh, really?
Illegal wars, torture, rape, Blackwater mercenaries, carpet bombs that look like food packages or toys, flesh-melting white phosphorus, indefinite detention without hearing of innocent civilians. Oh, let's not upset the Muslims!
Congress should consider, he says, the legislation for wounded warriors promptly so that those injured while defending our country, our freedom, can get the quality care they deserve. Hey, dumbass, they deserve to not be sent into an illegal war and occupation in the first place! Oh, that's right. You're a chicken hawk. You're George W. Bush. I just gotta keep this going until October, November. Next year. And whoever gets a job in Oval Office will go keep it going. So now we move on to the press briefing. On his visit with the Dalai Lama, reporter says, Mr. President, why are you going to attend the Congressional Awards Ceremony for the Dalai Lama today when China has expressed outrage about it? And what, if any, potential damage do you see to U.S.-China relations, considering that you need their support in dealing with Iran and North Korea on nuclear issues?
One, I admire the Dalai Lama a lot. Two, I support religious freedom.
Except for Islam.
He supports religious freedom.
Uh-huh.
Thirdly, I like going to the gold medal ceremony. I told the Chinese president, President Hu, that I was going to go to the ceremony.
President Hu?
Because I brought it up.
I brought it up.
And I said, I'm going because I want to honor this man.
President Hu?
I have consistently told the Chinese that religious freedom is in their nation's interest.
Oh, yeah.
So my visit today is not new to the Chinese leadership.
Uh-huh.
As I told you, I brought it up with him. I wanted to make sure he understood exactly why I was going.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't like it, of course.
But when has that ever stopped me from doing everything? Hell, the Iraqis didn't want to be bombed. The Afghans wanted to get their children to stay alive. I love antagonizing other countries that hold our national debt, like China. You know, they could sink our nation with a single bank transaction. You think I care? And you know what? I like going to them gold medal ceremonies. It's fun to see all the funny costumes and stuff there, and they have those little thingies, all those little gold medals ceremony food, like cheeseburger pizzas. And I'll bet today, since the Dalai Lama is, isn't he Chinese? Is that why the Chinese are upset? I bet they'll have some chow mein in there too, you think? And them little dumpling things, man. Damn. I love those ceremonies. I'd rather go to those ceremonies than about anything. I love the food. Food's really good.
What a dumb bastard. What an ignorant, tiny little man that wields so much power and control over so much of the globe. When you hear his statement about nuclear war, about World War III, I think you'll realize, even you right-wing pissants who monitor the program, you'll understand that this man is almost as insane as Giuliani. We got time for one more here? Can we take a break? No, I didn't think so. All right, stick around. We have more of this, and the good stuff is coming up. Well, good, bad, depends on your point of view. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Yeah.
The lunatic is in my head. Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
The lunatic is in my head. You raise the blade. You make the change. You rearrange me till I'm sane.
10 before the hour, back to the press briefing today with Chuckle Nuts. The next reporter, David, asks about the Israeli airstrikes against Syrian nuclear facilities, indicating that an attack against Iran might be next. Reporter David says, there's a report today from Israel Army Radio indicating that the Syrians have confirmed that the Israelis struck a nuclear site in their country. You wouldn't comment on that before, and I'm wondering if now, on the general question, you think it's dangerous for Israel to take such action if it feels that there is mortal danger being posed to the state?
David, my position hadn't changed.
Can I ask you whether you...
You asked me another question.
Did you support Israel's strike in 1981 on the Iraqi reactor outside Baghdad?
You know, Dave, I don't remember what I was doing in 1980. See, I was living in Midland, Texas. I don't remember my reaction that far back.
Now, as you look back at it, do you think it was the right action for Israel to take?
David, I'm not going to comment on the subject that you're trying to get me to comment on.
Isn't it a fair question to say, given all the talk about Iran and the potential threat, whether it would be appropriate for Israel to act
I understand what you're trying to take. It's a clever ruse to get me to comment on it, but I'm not going to. Thank you.
Why you think it's not appropriate to make that judgment when it is a real-world scenario, as we know, since they apparently took this action against Syria.
Dave. Welcome back.
Never answer any questions about Israel. Never.
Dave, I don't remember what I was doing in 1980. Let's say I was living in Midland, Texas, doing a lot of coke, doing a lot of Jack Black. Hell, we used to get so stoned, we just take out our guns and shoot the cows. I hate them goddamn cows. Do you know that, Dave? I hate cows. They scare the bejesus out of me, and we used to shoot them. Yeah, we did. We'd drive by in a pickup truck and just drill those old nasty bastards standing out there staring at me, making comments about me under their breath. I knew what they were talking about, Dave. But as far as the Israeli attack on the Iraqi, the what? They had an... See! I told you they had nuclear weapons!
This man is sick. Then the questions turned to Iraq. This reporter asks about all the alleged progress against al-Qaeda. Mr. President, on Iraq, you've talked repeatedly about the threat of al-Qaeda in Iraq, and we've also heard a lot about the military progress being made against al-Qaeda. Can you tell Americans how close is the United States to declaring victory against that group? And if you're not able to do so, does that suggest that your critics are correct? That this war cannot be won militarily?
Al-Qaeda is still dangerous. They're dangerous in Iraq. They're dangerous elsewhere. Al-Qaeda is not going to go away anytime soon. That's why it's important for us to be listening, you know, finding out what their intentions are.
Yeah.
What are their plans?
Yeah.
So we can respond to them. War against Al-Qaeda requires
what?
Actionable intelligence.
That's what.
That's why this FISA bill is important.
That's right.
And they still want to do us harm, Elaine, and they're still active.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've heard them bad in Iraq.
Yeah.
We've heard them bad elsewhere.
We have.
If you're the number three person in Al-Qaeda, you've had some rough goes. You've been captured or killed.
Many times.
And we're keeping the pressure on them.
Yep.
All the time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're making progress. And
here it comes.
But no, I fully understand those who say you can't win this thing militarily.
Here it comes.
That's exactly what the United States military says, that you can't win this military.
Son of a bitch! That's exactly what the U.S. military says, that you can't win this militarily. Yep. Well, you're right, George.
Well, if you can't win it militarily, then, I don't mean to be impertinent, President Chuckle Nuts. But if you can't win it militarily, then why in the hell are we still sending in troops to kill, to be killed, and to be seriously, grievously wounded? I mean, you just said it, you ignorant bastard. My God.
And not to parse his statement too much, but he says, we've heard him bad. We've heard him bad in Iraq. We've heard him bad elsewhere. If you're the number three person in Al-Qaeda, you've had some rough goes. You've either been captured or killed.
Many times.
Well, if you're the number three person in Iraq and you've been killed, I guess you have had a rough go.
Yeah. We've killed or captured the number three Al-Qaeda person in Iraq. Let me see here. Somebody got the notes on. Oh, here it is. We've killed or captured the number three person in Iraq. Let me see here. 1, 2, 6, 23. 14 times we've killed or captured the number three personer in Iraq.
They're zombies. It's like Night of the Living Dead. You kill them, they just keep coming
back.
They
pop back up. We'll kill them sons of bitches over and over again. We'll kill them till they stay dead. That's what we'll do. I seen that movie. I know about that movie. They had a Negro in there, didn't they? They did. I seen that movie. Now, I got to get out of here. I'm going over to Dalai Lama, that gold medal thing. They got Dim Sun over there. I know some of you sons of bitches refer to me as Dim Sun, but I'll tell you what. I'm going to go over and eat. I'm over and eat. I like them gold medal ceremonies. I like them a lot. I'm going to go over and eat. Get me some chow mein and some chop suey and some of them little biscuit things. They got little creature meat inside there. And you reporter people can just kiss my butt. I'm the president. You understand that? Well, Chuckle Nuts went over and had his dim sum. But I'll tell you what, we have three or four more sound bites, so stick around. The good stuff about World War III is coming. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Well, I have got an email from Bob at superbeans.com telling me the site was crashed, so apparently you folks just ignored my little request. All right, be that way. Bob's idea of promoting General Strike on November 6th, Election Day. Got an email from William that said he thought it was November 7th. November 6th, coming, Election Day, a Tuesday. Now, just a couple of comments about that before we go back to Chuckle Nuts. Already got an email from Peter Werby that said, he said, you're right, I wouldn't sub for you, although I'd love to do it. I'll be in the streets. Shut them down, Peter. So we know that I'm gonna humbly request Nova M to play a repeat of one of the programs because... you know, if you can talk the talk, you got to walk the walk, too. Ron in Glendale, Arizona sends, hi, Mike. In the words of IWW organizer Joseph Ettor, quote, if the workers of the world want to win, all they have to do is recognize their own solidarity. They have nothing to do but fold their arms and the world will stop. The workers are more powerful with their hands in their pockets than all the property of the capitalists. That's true. And Bridget, who writes, an interesting factor in this movement is that November 6th is an election day. We in Oregon vote by mail, so my ballot will be in. And I can stay put and not do anything that day. But people in other states may have to drive if they want to exercise their right to comment via the ballot box. An interesting choice. Yeah, it is. And I understand that it's election day. I really do. I don't know what elections. These are local elections, I believe. There aren't any congressional elections. So I don't know. Maybe absentee ballots. I know in some states it's probably too late to get them. So, yeah, it's a choice. Maybe going to vote doesn't count as doing something. You know, I'm talking about not buying anything, not going to work, not going to school. Whoops! Not going to work! I just violated something that Bush signed! Christ, I'm on my way to Guantanamo! Help! 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 The following is a recording. All right, let's go back to the press briefing today. The next reporter asked about Putiput's recent cozying up in Iran's President Ahmadinejad. Reporter says, on President Putin's visit to Tehran and his meeting with President Ahmadinejad, he issued a stern warning, Mr. Bush, against potential U.S. military action against Tehran. Putin said, he sees no evidence to suggest Iran wants to build a nuclear bomb. Does that indicate possibly that international pressure is not as great as you once thought it was against Iran forcing that country to abandon its nuclear program?
I look forward to, if those are in fact his comments, I look forward to having him clarify those, because when I visited with him, he understands that it's in the world's interest to make sure that Iran does not have the capacity to make a nuclear weapon. And I believe that the Iranian... if Iran had a nuclear weapon, it would be a dangerous threat to world peace.
Here it comes.
We got a leader in Iran who has announced that he wants to destroy Israel.
Not true. Here he comes.
So I've told people that if you're interested in avoiding World War III, it seems like you ought to be interested in preventing them from having the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon. And I take the threat of Iran with a nuclear weapon very seriously.
I take the threat of you with thousands of nuclear weapons very seriously. You sick man! If those are in fact his comments, Vlad's comments, Bush doesn't know what Putin said? We're talking about global thermonuclear war, according to this half-wit, and he doesn't know what Vlad said? How much time does he spend with his Game Boy? He looks forward to having Putin clarify his words. Putin's going to give him the middle finger and say, Dobroshny, or whatever the Russian is for, you know. We got a leader in Iran who has announced that he wants to destroy Israel. We have a leader in Washington who announced he wants to destroy Iran. When did Ahmadinejad say that? He said he would like to see regime change in Israel, the same as we said about Iraq, and then invaded the country and murdered their people for 12 years. So I've told people, if you're interested in avoiding World War III, that gets your attention, doesn't it? If you're interested in avoiding World War III, get rid of Cheney, Armitage, Pearl, Kissinger, Negroponte. How many more names you want, chuckle nuts? Those are the people who... Advisors who have now circled around Giuliani because they're too weird even for your gang. We'll get to that in a minute. Next reporter followed up on the Putin problem. The question, Mr. President, following up on Vladimir Putin for a moment, he said recently that next year when he has to step down, according to the Constitution, the Russian Constitution, as president, he may become prime minister. In effect, keeping power and dashing any hopes for a genuine democratic transition there. So, Sarah McCain said yesterday, when he looks into Putin's eyes, he sees a K, a G, and a B. and he would never have invited him to Kennebunkport like you did. And he said, it's time we got a little tough with Vladimir Putin. I'm wondering if you think, is Senator McCain right? And what would it mean for Russian democracy if, when you leave power, Vladimir Putin is still there?
You know, one of the interesting, my leadership style has been to try to be in a position where I actually can influence people.
Or terrify them.
And one way to do that is to have personal relationships that that enable me to sit down and tell people what's on my mind without fear of rupturing relations. That's how I've tried to conduct my business with Vladimir Putin. We don't agree on a lot of issues. We do agree on some. Iran is one. Nuclear proliferation is another.
I don't think so.
We've worked hard to make it, you know, appear in their interest. We made it clear to them that it's in their interest to have good relations with the West.
Oh, yeah?
So Russia's a complex relationship, but it's an important relationship to maintain.
Are you disappointed if he stays in power after you're gone?
I have no idea what he's going to do. I asked him.
Yeah.
When I saw him in Australia, I tried to get it out of him, who's going to be his successor, what he intends to do, and he was wily.
He's wily.
He wouldn't tip his hand. I'll tip mine. I'm going to finish. I'm going to work hard to the finish. Uh-huh. I'm going to sprint to the finish line, and then you'll find me in Crawford.
It should be in The Hague. He says, we don't agree on a lot of issues, Mr. Bush and the Russian dictator. He says, but we do agree on some. Iran is one. Nuclear proliferation is another. I don't think so, Mensa man. You're wrong on both counts there. Hasn't your Secretary of State given you any cliff notes on the recent news? I was on a cruise ship in the middle of the Pacific, and I'm better informed than you are, chuckle nuts. Oh, and by the way, water's wet. He says, we worked hard to make it appear in their interests, the Russians' interest, to work with us. We made it clear to them that it's in their interest to have good relations with the West. Putin doesn't give a tinker's damn about good relations with the West, you moron. He's got more oil than Saudi Arabia. He doesn't care about you or the West. He hates the West because he can't be part of the West. Because we had a 70-year-long Cold War, George. Nobody likes the Russian leadership. Nobody likes the American leadership. It's the same old. It might as well be 1956. Leadership of both countries is hated by the rest of the world because the leadership of both countries is psychotic. You think Putin is worried about what you think? Oh, my God.
As you know, Vladimir Putin and I have got a good personal relationship. This is a vital and important relationship, and the relationship's an important relationship, and I would call the relationship a good relationship.
All right, as far as Bush sprinting to the finish line, we are sprinting to the finish line with these clips, too. Just two more. This reporter asked W, how could he blame Congress for lack of action when they're operating under his ridiculous veto threats and outrageous budget requests for ongoing worldwide slaughter? Reporter says, Mr. President, a year ago after Republicans lost control of Congress, you said you wanted to find common ground. This morning you gave us a pretty scathing report card on Democrats, but I'm wondering, how have you assessed yourself in dealing with Democrats this past year in finding common ground? Is it all their fault that these bills aren't moving? That you've got these veto threats out there?
I think it is their fault that bills aren't moving. Yeah, as I said, I'm not a part of the legislative branch. But as
Cheney is
head of the executive branch, it makes sense to call upon Congress to show progress and get results. Yeah. It's hard to find common ground unless important bills are moving.
Really?
They're not even moving.
Damn.
All I can do is ask him to move bills.
Move bills.
It's up to the leaders to move the bills.
Move the bills.
And you bet I'm going to put veto threats out. Of course, I want to remind you, I put a lot of veto threats out when the Republicans were in control of Congress. I said, now, if you overspend, I'm going to veto your bills. And they listened.
More like they responded to your crime family's strong-arming and threats against their children if they didn't vote the way you wanted. Right, chuckle nuts? Remember the time you threatened a guy you wouldn't help his son get elected? Oh, I think it was Karl Rove that did that. Unless they did exactly, that's a representative did exactly, or a senator did exactly what you demanded. You are a lying son of a bitch, George, and a very ignorant little man. Last one from Too Stupid to Chew a Pretzel, this time about General Sanchez's comments about Bush's gross mishandling of Iraq, the war, the invasion, the bombing, the occupation, the murder, the slaughter, the torture. The reporter says, I wonder if you felt blindsided by the very blistering criticism recently from retired General Ricardo Sanchez, who is one of your top commanders in Iraq. He told news conference last week, Mr. President, there's been glaring, unfortunate displays of incompetent strategic leadership with international leaders on Iraq. Seems like quite a lack of common ground there, sir.
I admire General Sanchez's service to the country. I appreciate his service to the country.
And we'll have him killed.
The situation on the ground has changed quite dramatically since he left Iraq.
Really?
The security situation is changing dramatically. The
really?
Reconciliation that's taking place is changing. The economy is getting better. So I'm pleased with the progress we're making, and I admire the fact that he served. I appreciate his service.
Should the American people feel disturbed that a former top general says that?
Yeah, that's right. Ignore him and call on another reporter, you cowardly little chicken hawk. You've always been a coward, George. You'll die a coward. You are a coward. What does he say? The situation on the ground has changed dramatically. The security situation. Is changing? Security? Blackwater is gunning down more innocent civilians, really? The economy is getting better? For whom? For Exxon? What the hell is he talking about? I don't know what he's talking about, but I have something here that was written by 12 former Army captains, not non-coms, commissioned officers. You remember the letter that was in the New York Times? This one is in the Washington Post. Yesterday, 12 former Army captains who have served in Babil and Baghdad in 2003 and 2005, in Salah al-Din and al-Najaf in 2004, in al-Anbar, Baghdad, and Nineveh in 2006, in Diyala in 2004, in Babil and Baghdad in 2003-2005, the next one served in Nineveh in 2003, the next one served in Anbar, Baghdad and Nineveh in 2003-2005, Babil and Baghdad in 2003-2005. The next one served in Baghdad in 2006. The next one served in Nineveh in 2004. And on and on and on. And I'm going to share their brief letter with you when we come back, which is not for a minute. Do we leave? Oh, damn. I screwed up again, didn't I? 12 Army captains, and I think they're all on inactive duty right now, but these are all people who have served in a commissioned officer role, and I think you'll be surprised by what they have to say. The title of what they wrote is The Real Iraq We Knew. The Real Iraq We Knew. Not the Iraq of Bush's wet dreams. Not the Iraq of the Project for New American Century's murderous attack and occupation of that country and destabilization of just damn near every corner of this sad, weeping earth tonight. No, 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 no. This comes from 12 captains in the United States Army We'll share it with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Symptoms of mad cowboy can lead to travesties. I'm lying just to justify. Mama, do you please? Mad cowboy can be fatal. Can make you paranoid. Can make you maladjusted. A person to avoid. You rave against the terrorists, then murder like they do. You even claim the peaceniks are terrorizing you. Your old friends and allies you see as enemies. It's mighty freaking dangerous. Mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk.
Proof that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
You knocked me out. Out off of my feet.
25 before the hour. Okay, let's hear what 12 former Army captains who have seen combat all over Iraq have to say. They wrote this for the Washington Post under the heading, The Real Iraq We Knew. Today marks 5 years, this is yesterday, today marks 5 years since the authorization of military force in Iraq, setting Operation Iraqi Freedom in motion. 5 years on, the Iraq War is as undermanned and under-resourced as it was from the start, and 5 years on, Iraq is in shambles. As Army captains who served in Baghdad and beyond, we've seen the corruption and the sectarian division. We understand what it's like to be stretched too thin, and we know when it's time to get out. What does Iraq look like on the ground? It's certainly far from being a modern, self-sustaining country. Many roads, bridges, schools, and hospitals are in deplorable condition. Fewer people have access to drinking water or sewage systems than before the war. And Baghdad is averaging less than 8 hours of electricity a day. Iraq's institutional infrastructure, too, is sorely wanting. Even if the Iraqis wanted to work together and accept the national identity foisted upon them in the 1920s, the ministries do not have enough trained administrators or technicians to coordinate themselves. At the local level, most communities are still controlled by the same autocratic sheikhs that ruled under Saddam. There is no reliable postal system, no effective banking system, no registration system to monitor the population and its needs. The inability to govern is exacerbated at all levels by widespread corruption. The organization Transparency International ranks Iraq as one of the most corrupt countries in the world. And indeed, many of us witnessed the exploitation of U.S. tax dollars by Iraqi officials and military officers. Sabotage and graft have had a particularly deleterious impact on Iraq's oil industry, which still fails to produce the revenue that Pentagon war planners hoped would pay for Iraq's reconstruction. Yet holding people accountable has proved difficult. The first commissioner of a panel charged with preventing and investigating corruption resigned last month, citing pressure from the government and threats on his life. Against this backdrop, the U.S. military has been trying in vain to hold the country together. Even with the so-called surge, we simply do not have enough soldiers and Marines to meet the professed goals of clearing areas from insurgent control, holding them securely, and building sustainable institutions. Though temporary reinforcing operations in places like Fallujah, An-Najaf, Tal Afar, and now Baghdad may brief well on PowerPoint presentations, in practice, they just push insurgents to another spot on the map and often strengthen the insurgents' cause by harassing locals to a point of swayed allegiances. Millions of Iraqis correctly recognize these actions for what they are and vote with their feet, moving within Iraq or leaving the country entirely. Still, our colonels and generals keep holding on to flawed concepts. U.S. forces responsible for too many objectives and too much battle space are vulnerable targets. The sad inevitability of a protracted drawdown is further escalation of attacks on U.S. troops, civilian leaders, and advisory teams. They would also no doubt get caught in the crossfire of the imminent Iraqi civil war. Iraqi security forces would not be able to salvage the situation. Even if all the Iraqi military and police were properly trained, equipped, and truly committed, their 346,000 personnel would be too few. As it is, Iraqi soldiers quit at will. The police are effectively controlled by militias. And again, corruption is debilitating. U.S. tax dollars enrich self-serving generals and support the very elements that will battle each other after we're gone. This is Operation Iraqi Freedom and the reality we experienced. This is what we tried to communicate up the chain of command. This is either what did not get passed on to our civilian leadership or what our civilian leadership chose to ignore. While our generals pursue a strategy dependent on peace breaking out, the Iraqis prepare for their war, and our servicemen and women and their families continue to suffer. There is one way we might be able to succeed in Iraq. To continue an operation of this intensity and duration, we would have to abandon our volunteer military for compulsory service. Short of that, our best option is to leave Iraq immediately. A scaled withdrawal will not prevent a civil war, and it will spend more blood and treasure on a losing proposition. America, it has been 5 years. It's time to make a choice. Signed by 12 former United States Army captains. Now, I don't know how much more blunt an assessment can be. Sure, if we have universal military conscription, we can do what we attempted half-assedly to do in Vietnam. If we can put 500,000 to 1 million troops in Iraq, we will clear the country of insurgents. We will clear the country of damn near everybody. And the captains are right. It requires a military draft. Are you ready to send your child or your grandchild into this Bush war? Are you ready? You right-wing piglets, you sniffing, long-suffering little rat bastards who listen to the program, are you ready to go or send your darling children or grandchildren into this war? Are you? Huh? If so, get off your ass and go enlist. Drive your grandson or your daughter down to the nearest recruiting office and make her sign up. Go ahead. Let's see you do it. Now, regarding Bush and World War III, in Tehran yesterday, Vladimir Putin said, quote, "Not only should we reject the use of force against Iran, but also the mention of force as a possibility." Ah, and as the New York Times reports, proposed new UN sanctions pressed in particular by the U.S. and France. Isn't that funny? Have so far been blocked by Russia, which holds a veto on the Security Council and favors continued dialogue with Tehran. All those dirty commies. Dialogue? Bomb them! Kill them! But Mr. Putin has gone further. Putin questions what evidence the Americans and the French have for asserting that Iran intends to make nuclear weapons. When President Sarkozy of France visited Moscow earlier this month, the French president, Mr. Putin said, quote, "We don't have information showing that Iran is striving to produce nuclear weapons. That's why we are proceeding on the basis that Iran does not have such plans," end quote. And while Putin says Russia is taking Iran's description of its program at face value, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice recently asserted that Iran is lying. Lying! They're lying, the dirty bastards! They have nuclear weapons behind every palm tree and under the ass of every camel! They do! The dirty liars! Kill! 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 down, Mike. Yesterday, speaking to the Republican Jewish Coalition, Rudy Giuliani's bluster toward Iran was unrestrained. He almost seemed to be looking forward to a military confrontation, insisting without proof that Iran is currently building nuclear weapons and emphasizing that, quote, the military option is not off the table, end quote. This is from the CarpetbaggerReport.com. Giuliani told a forum organized by the coalition, the Republican Jewish Coalition, quote, if I am president of the United States, I guarantee you we will never find out what they will do if they get nuclear weapons because they are not going to get a nuclear weapon. And as the Carpetbagger Report reports, those kind of remarks are a very small reminder of why the public should be genuinely concerned about the prospect of a Giuliani presidency. There's something altogether more menacing about Giuliani in Oval Office than, say, a twit like Bush. Josh Marshall yesterday described, quote, the truly catastrophic foreign policy Giuliani would likely pursue, end quote. Matt Iglesias said yesterday that he struggled to find a way to explain how terrified he is of a Giuliani presidency, explaining that it would be, quote, a quantum leap of lunacy. And just at the time when the country desperately needs a clean break and a lurch in the other direction, end quote. Ezra Klein added, quote, he's not just another Republican. He's not even another Bush. He's constructed a foreign policy team that is almost unimaginably dangerous and aggressive, end quote. Maybe some specifics will help flesh this out. The policy advisors a candidate chooses to surround himself or herself with can tell us quite a bit about what kind of policies would be pursued in office. That's especially true when it comes to candidates with no foreign policy or national security experience, like Rudy. Rudy has tapped some high-profile foreign policy aides to help shape his worldview on international affairs. And as Josh Marshall explains, Giuliani's foreign policy team is made up of, quote, all the guys who are too nuts to make the cut with George W. Bush, end quote. Who are they? Norman Podoretz, the godfather of modern neoconservative who believes America has to go to war with Iran as quickly as possible. Daniel Pipes, a man who has a long and distinguished career of advocating war against every Arab and Muslim country on the planet. He's also called for racial profiling of Muslim government employees in the United States. And in true McCarthyite fashion, he believes they may be a secret threat to the country. Thomas Jocelyn, Giuliani's terrorism advisor. Jocelyn has argued repeatedly that Saddam Hussein was connected to Al-Qaeda and now believes that Iran is connected to Al-Qaeda. Birmingham, Alabama is connected to Al-Qaeda. Montreal, Quebec is connected to Al-Qaeda. His mother is connected to Al-Qaeda. And then there's Michael Rubin, Giuliani's Iran advisor. Rubin has been closely connected to Ahmad Shalabi. You remember him. And he signed on with Douglas Feith's Office of Special Plans in 2002 to organize a murderous assault against a helpless third world oil-rich country. Rubin has been aggressively for an Iranian invasion. If it gets down, I swear to God, if it gets down to Hillary and this psychopathic Giuliani, I got to tell you, folks, Hillary's going to get my vote. But only under those conditions. It's madness. Isn't it madness? Isn't it crazy? Isn't it insane? Huh? Bush warned Turkey today at his press conference, we didn't get that cut for you because we know what your tolerance limit is, what your gag reflex, how far we can go. But Bush warned Turkey today. What was Turkey's response? Bush warned Turkey not to attack the Kurds inside Iraq. What was Turkey's response? The lawmakers in the Turkish parliament okayed, gave their official imprimatur for an attack against Iraq.
Who gives a goddamn what George Bush says? No one. No one on earth cares. And then you want some more irony? Syria gives its backing to a Turkish invasion into Iraq. Syria! Let the games begin.
Got a lot of problems, but I'm going to tell you something about this country. In my mind, there is no doubt that we won't solve these problems.
Really? Claude writes in regarding the genocide against the Armenians. And the resolution in Congress. Claude writes, the backpedaling of the Democrats in Congress regarding the genocide against the Armenians is disgusting. Saying they cannot call it genocide because it jeopardizes American interests in the region could imply that the recognition of the genocide against the Jews was made because it helped American interests in the same region. How principled are they? Claude writes. Yeah, all of a sudden, genocide is not genocide if it disturbs someone who we dare not disturb. It's madness, truth seeker. It's just absolute madness. Isn't it? Do you ever just kind of kick back and, you know, I'm so homesick to be back on that boat, I could just scream. We were out, not in the middle of the Pacific by any means, but we were far enough away from land most of the time we couldn't see anything except schools of porpoises. And I saw my first flying fish. Oh, my God. But we were so far out there, we're hanging out with 75 people who we all pretty much shared the same basic idea. There's differences, you know. The thing about Democrats, liberals, they're not lockstep.
Oh, yes, sir, tell me what to think. Yes, ma'am, okay.
Uh-uh. But to just be out there for that fellowship and that togetherness, and we didn't all sit around and, you know, pick fleas off each other like primates doing the grooming thing. But just knowing that we're out there in this little isolated bubble, it just felt good. I'm just homesick. This is what I call the coming home from grandma's blues. When I was a little kid, I used to spend a lot of time with my grandparents. Couldn't understand my grandfather most of the time because he screamed in Italian. But I loved being there. They had 3-4 acres on the edge of Findlay, Ohio. Had a big garden, apple orchard. They used to play out there. No other kids around, so it was a great fantasy life. Climb an apple tree, be a pirate ship or a mountaintop or whatever. But I loved it at my grandparents, even though my grandmother was kind of religious, not just crazed religious. It didn't bother me back then. Yeah, that's grandma. No, don't worry, grandma. I'm not going to burn in hell. But I loved it. I loved it. I'd go there and spend a month in the summer. One less mouth for my parents to feed back in the city. That's how it worked. You know, some of you remember that. And when I came home back to Toledo, it was awful because all of a sudden I couldn't hear the birds in the orchard anymore. And I didn't get up with my grandmother and go weed the garden. And I didn't go out at 4:30 in the afternoon before my grandparent and my grandfather and my uncles came home from work and help her pull carrots and lettuce and tomatoes. And get that earthy smell and go back in the house and watch her prepare dinner from stuff she'd pulled out of the garden, you know. And I would get so homesick for that.
I couldn't describe it then. I was only 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. But I called it the coming home from Grandma's blues. Maybe John Neems will write a song titled that, huh? That's what I feel right now. I wish I was back on that boat. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. There's so much more to talk about, but let's go to some phone calls. All right, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. How are the efforts going in San Diego at KLSD to keep us on the air? All right, starting with Josh, who is calling from New Mexico, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. I wanted to say I'm glad to hear that you made the decision not to come to work on November 6th.
Yeah, I hope the company doesn't look at that askance and say, all right, what? Air America would probably fire me, but I don't think Nova M will do it. But you never know. But yeah, I was helped along with the decision by Bob at superbeans.com. But he's absolutely right. And if I'm going to talk about it, I'm going to do it. So I'm going to do it.
Well, after I heard your little rant that you went on, I tried to call and I couldn't get through. So I figured I'd call tonight to give you something that might make you smile.
Okay.
I'm a truck driver, and there are over 3,000 truck drivers so far that have find a list of people who are not going to do anything. We're not going to do anything.
Is that right? That is cool beyond words.
Over 1,000 of those are fuel tankers.
Wow.
Yeah. And something that might make you kind of bite your fingernails, completely off the topic, but, do you know where the warmonger Dick Cheney is right now?
I don't. He's kind of fallen off the radar screen for a while, hadn't he?
He's overseeing anti-terrorism exercise being held from October 15th through the 19th. Do you know what the scenario is?
I do not.
What the reaction would be or how we would respond to nuclear or radiological weapons being set off on American soil.
Oh, Jesus, you're kidding me.
Nope, and now do you know what that rings a bell to?
Yeah, what occurred on September 11, 2001.
Yeah, I guess I'm just a conspiracy theorist, but it's a lot of coincidence.
Well,
I
don't see any conspiracy theories there at all, Josh. What I see is Bush's famous statement, fool me once, shame on you, fool me, won't get fooled again.
Yep.
Yeah, that's scary. I just wish Cheney would I'll go do something else besides try to destroy the entire planet. I just wish he would. So how many truckers have signed up for this?
A little over 3,200 right now.
Good God. That
that probably won't even be a ripple in the pond, in the grand scheme of things. But you know, I mean,
it's a start.
I'm on national radio. You know, I'm on Sirius right now. You know, there may be more listening right now that's saying, "Hey,
that's
hey,
right.
I can do that."
That's right. That's right. I wonder how many people who work in manufacturing see. I don't know. I just wish this were a strong union country like it was at one time, even hell in my lifetime, back in the 50s. Because the unions, I know that the unions would say to the workers, we're going to pull a one-day walkout just because no one's listening to us. Nobody's paying attention. This murderous occupation is continuing. And now I heard on our AP news here, that the Pentagon is getting ready to put on notice 8 National Guard units, I believe, all in New York State, that they better get ready to go to Iraq or Afghanistan beginning late next summer. That's a year from now. These sons of bitches. I can't believe. Oh, well. Well, I hope, Josh, that people will do something on November 6th. Tuesday, November 6th. And all we have to do is nothing.
Exactly.
That's all we have to do.
Take a day off.
Just take a day off. Spend some time with your kids, your grandkids, your puppy, your weed, your backyard. Go for a walk. If you're religious, go to church. You know, just do nothing. Just do nothing. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate your patience in holding on. I know you're holding on over an hour there, way over an hour. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Take care.
No problem, man. I wanted to make sure to get through to you this time.
Well, I appreciate it, and drive safely. We'll talk again, Josh. Elaine is calling from Finland, listening on the Internet. Elaine, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Yo, it's 12 after 6 in the morning, so hello from the future.
Well, hey, listen. Where, what city, if you are in a city in Finland, are you calling from?
I'm calling from Helsinki.
Oh, Helsinki, from the capital. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I sent you an email about, you know, not too long ago about President Dennis Kucinich and Speaker Maxine Waters, you know, thinking that you might just open up the program with a note from the future, but I guess it wasn't good enough to read on air. So
Alan, I don't remember seeing that. When did you send it?
Oh, a few weeks back.
Oh, a few weeks ago. If you still have it in your send file, if you'll send it again, I will make sure. I'll make sure that I read it because I don't remember that one. It must
have
got.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I have a dialogue with you and Kathy talking to each other where, you know, your program would just completely disintegrate and we'd have to run more Best of Malloy programs and stuff like that.
Well, send it to me again.
Okay, I'll be glad to. Hey, listen, just to follow up on what Josh was talking about, to give him a little inspiration, we only need to look to our good friends in France.
I know, they know. Yeah, I've mentioned that several times. When the French worker gets pissed off about anything, there is no power in France that will stop the men and women who are in the workforce from saying, that's enough, and they just walk out.
That's right. And their 24-hour transportation strike started at 8 o'clock in Paris last night, and the service is crippled already. And, you know, I'm sure the media in America will do its best to black everything out, but
I hadn't heard about this latest strike. Is this a trucker strike?
No. This is a transportation strike. I mean, there is no rail service. National Railway is shut down. Practically all of the high speed TGV trains are shut down.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're in Paris and you want to go to the airport, you're going to have to get a cab.
Right.
There's no way for you to get out there. And Mr. Sarkozy is trying, the president Sarkozy is trying to, you know, make cuts on pension forms for civil service reform because, you know, something has to change. And he says that he's not going to buckle under this pressure, but.
Yes, he will.
Yes, he will.
He damn sure will buckle. His word. He will damn sure give in to the French worker. There is no question that he will. He can sit there and say he won't, but he will. So that's. But I hadn't heard anything about this.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. Go ahead.
I was listening to your rant yesterday. and I was on the bus, and I was just saying, yes, yes, brother, speak to me. Speak to me. Let's buy nothing. And it just reminds me, I was reading a book called The Silent Takeover. Back in the 80s, a coalition had bought enough money to purchase ads on national TV of a national Buy Nothing Day.
Yeah.
And those ads were rejected. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, what Josh is doing, what you talked about, I mean, this ties in. This is the only thing we can do because, I mean, the airlines are not going to stop, and shutting down the rail is only going to affect the Northeast. But, you know, the judges can't make you order a Domino's pizza. The judges can't make you go buy an iPhone. They can't make you do that. And that's really what you were saying yesterday is exactly what needs to be done. I mean, imagine if we all did it one day a week.
Yeah. If Americans could understand, and I think most Americans do understand once they listen and pay attention, it's just most Americans are not listening to the dialogue, to what's going on in this country. And again, I fully understand, you know, I'm a working class person. I do not make the kind of money that major talk show hosts make, never have. And I would assume that my company will pay me for the day I'm going to take off. But if they don't, I understand that it is inconvenient for people to say, no, I'm not going to do anything today. I understand that. But if just 10% of the U.S. population would do that, that's 30 million people who would just stop and say, no, I've got no other avenue to protest this. No one cares. So I'm just going to not do anything. That's all. Total passive resistance.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, and I encourage everybody out there to do it. It's easy for me to say it sitting here because I don't live in America anymore. But, I mean, I teach tennis. If I don't teach, I don't get paid. But I got my friend Yoke to listen to you, and he was like, you know, this man is right on. He's exactly right on with what we're saying. So who knows? Maybe we'll shut down. Well, he'll shut down his restaurant one day if enough momentum is generated.
I hear you, Elaine. Thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate your call.
Right.
Your call from Finland. Take care. Resend that thing to me. I'd love to see it. Take care. Okay. We'll talk again. We better break here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
23 past the hour. Okay, here it is in the BBC. Workers in France have begun a strike, which has severely disrupted the country's transport system, especially railway network. The 24-hour strike began on Wednesday at 1800 Greenwich Mean Time. Trade unions called the strike in protest against the reform of special pension schemes enjoyed by a minority of state sector workers. A minority of state sector workers, and the rest of the country says, screw this, and they go on strike. 24-hour strike. That's all. That's all. 24-hour strike. Back to your phone calls. Todd is calling from Portland, Oregon, listening on Sirius. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Mike. Glad to be on your show.
Thank you.
Before I get to my main point, I'd just like to say you thought Dick Cheney should do something else. Well, he could work in a winery and be a cork soaker. He could work in a plumbing house and be a caulk socker. Or he could just be himself.
That's true. A cork soaker.
A caulk socker, a sock tucker, a coke sacker, you know, whatever you want.
Well, cork soakers are pretty important. If you don't have the cork soaked, it's never going to fit into the bottle. God knows, I've opened enough bottles of wine and had the damn thing disintegrate, and then you drink cork. So, yeah, I think you're right. Cheney would make a good cork soaker.
But what I was thinking of was earlier on you were talking about the possible need for a draft. Well, I have an idea for a draft that would unite the country instead of dividing it, and there wouldn't be any class issues.
All right.
I call it the Carthage draft.
The Carthage, ancient Carthage?
Yes, because back in ancient Carthage, when times were very bad, they sacrificed little children.
Uh-oh.
In public.
Oh, God.
But it was only the children of the nobility and the wealthy. Every one of them had to pony up a kid in front of everybody else.
Oh, my God.
So here's my thought.
Oh.
The day that war is declared or the president projects force or there's an authorization of force, everybody in Congress and the Senate, everybody in the executive branch, let's say two grades below cabinet and up, and everybody in the Cheney branch of government, immediately a child, a grandchild, if they don't have one, then a spouse.
Yeah,
or a sibling, or a niece, or a nephew, or something like that'll do.
Yeah,
is drafted for the duration.
For the duration.
For the duration, not as an officer, as a raw recruit, and their military operation specialty will be rifleman or cavalry scout or forward radio operator. If one of them dies, well, you just pony up another one, and it keeps going until the war is over.
Until the war is over. That certainly is a lot more humane than just giving up one of your children for slaughter. I like that idea. Yeah.
And you know, that way you can have your war, but you're going to have to explain to your spouse why their child isn't coming home, and you'll have to have the same sleepless nights as everybody else.
Yeah, it's the difference between being, invested and committed. Somebody told me one time, think of bacon and eggs.
For the hen, it's a contribution.
Right.
For the pig, it's a total commitment.
It's a total commitment. That's right.
Yeah, it wouldn't be like Vietnam, where it was according to the papers that got declassified towards the end, it was specifically the poor, the stupid, people unfit for service that they just decided to clear out. No, this would be, W would have actually had to go to war and carry a rifle like Al Gore did.
What a wonderful idea. Todd, I like it. I like it a lot. Thank you very much. I appreciate
you. You're quite welcome.
Appreciate you checking in, pal. Have a nice evening. We'll be back after the break. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. You can get up and dance briefly. Go ahead.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, I'm rereading Bob's email. The guy who runs superbeans.com. In this paragraph, he writes, I know if I do nothing regarding the general strike on November 6th, I know if I do nothing, my inaction will be mirrored millions of times over. If I do something, then perhaps those actions will be mirrored millions of times over. As I told my daughter last night, if we do nothing, we guarantee nothing will happen. Now, this is kind of cool because what we're talking about here is doing something that is, in fact, nothing. Oh, God, can we get more Zen than that? Hello, Dalai Lama! Yoo-hoo! Malloy over here! Do you get that? On November 6th, we will do something. And it will be nothing. And in doing nothing, on November 6th, those of us who choose to do nothing, we will be doing something that is profoundly not nothing. Oh, Jesus, I just turned my mind into a complete Rosetta knot of some sort. I can't, help, help. But you understand, I love what Bob wrote. It's very true. If I do nothing, my inaction will be mirrored millions of times over. If I do something, then perhaps those actions will be mirrored millions of times over as well. As I told my daughter last night, if we do nothing, we guarantee nothing will happen. So let's do something by doing nothing. Wow, that sounds like Don Juan or Don Gennaro, doesn't it? It does. Back to your phone calls. David is calling from Cincinnati, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, David.
All right, hey, look, my truck ain't moving the sticks either.
Amen and amen. God bless you, David.
Man, I'll tell you, I've been listening to you for a long time. When you were on that other station there,
yeah, Air America.
I looked around for you. We caught you a few times in the middle of the night. Then we went to your website.
Yeah.
And I just canceled my radio right then. I sent you an email saying I'll see you on Sirius. I'm glad you made it.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you do a great job. Thank you. You keep me up at night. I don't really know what else to say other than thanks, man.
Well, David, I appreciate the fact that you choose this program, even if you only listen for not the whole 3 hours, but for as long as you listen. Thanks a lot.
Well, I always listen all the way through.
Well, thanks, David. Take
care,
man.
Thanks.
And drive safe. Drive safe.
Always.
All right,
bye,
sir. Can you imagine? If I don't know how many truckers there are, over-the-road truckers, long-distance truckers in this country. I know there are an awful lot. But can you imagine if I realize this would cause hardship for some people. That's the problem. That's the problem. If every single trucker on a given day, for whatever reason, whether it was in support of or protest against, whatever the issue was, if every single trucker stopped on a given day, except those who are delivering critical necessities, like, you know, I can imagine that being a very not good, double plus ungood thing to happen if the trucker was delivering oxygen to a hospital or blood from a blood bank. You know, you understand what I'm saying. Critical movement is critical because it's critical. Jesus, this program is Zen tonight. I can't stand it. But anything beyond critical necessity, I'm talking about just the normal crap that we buy in this country. And I'm including food. Oh, trust me. But if every trucker stopped for one day and just said, I am doing this in support of or in protest against, you know, whatever the issue is. This country would, you know, the Teamsters Union used to talk about this a lot. I remember back in the 70s, in the 60s, when the Teamsters Union hadn't been scabbed to the point where it's difficult for the Teamsters, now for any union, to exercise what should be their natural power. That's what unions are about. But there was always talk that if things didn't improve, if things didn't change, whatever the issue was, if the truckers ever stopped, then America would understand how critical truck drivers were to not just the economy, screw the economy, to our lives. So I don't know. It's this November 6th thing is going to have to be an individual call. Everybody's going to have to make their own decision. There's a lot of people who, out of economic necessity, are not going to be able to do it because we live in the United States of America, and if you don't dance, you don't eat for an awful lot of people. So, you know, it's an individual call. But I just, you know, I think about that sometimes. What if the truck drivers and the airline pilots and the bus drivers and the train engineers just said, no, you know what? The system is broken, so we're going to register our protest. Wow. Jack is calling from Virginia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jack.
How's it going?
Hey, it's going. How you doing?
I know. Good, good. I've called you before. I'm the one that's doing the trucking documentary about the unions. And,
yeah. What's the website again?
It's brotherhoodofthecdl.com, and that's all one word.
Brotherhoodofthecdl.com.
And that stands for Commercial Driver's License. And
yeah, that's
on
that's
MySpace right. And YouTube.
Yeah, how's it going? How's it
good.
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 I'm
I love your
it.
Show. I'm not a lefty, but I really love your show, and I know you don't believe in much of religion, but man, it's you know, it's like I'm a truck driver, you know, and I've got a load of paint, and I'm going to New Jersey, and I couldn't figure out why I got this load, you know, but I've been trying to figure out a day where I could boycott and shut down the roads without causing harm and to the economy and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been planning to take time off on the 31st, and I'm gonna boycott in front of Coors Beer because they don't support truck drivers. But I've got a big website. I've got a lot of people that listen to me on my website, and over 100,000 people. And I'm gonna put the word out, and you know, I'm gonna do the Paul Revere thing. I'm gonna be going from New Jersey all the way back to Denver, Colorado. You know, honking my horn and getting the word out about November 6th. Because I've been trying to figure out a day that people could decide for their own to stop and think about what we're doing. And I was so disappointed in the recent strikes that they didn't last very long. And I'm thrilled to hear about that, you know. And, you know, I mean, if just half the truck drivers, even just a few of the truck drivers shut down their trucks for even just half a day, it would just be incredible, you know. It's like I can't even find a place to park, you know, when people are running full time. I mean, can you imagine trying to park a truck if just a few people park their trucks?
No, I can't imagine it. And it's always been my contention because, you know, I had some people educate me years and years and years ago about the importance of over the road drivers, but it's always astonished me how America doesn't get it about truck drivers.
No, they don't.
Just how critical to everything that goes on in this country, moving those millions of tons of goods over the nation's highways, how critical that is. And man, you're right. If truckers stopped for an hour, if they just pulled over and stopped for an hour, it would have a profound visual effect. You know, every once in a while in the Midwest, in the winter, when they get hit with a snowstorm, you know, 30 inches of snow, and you see the video of I-94 or I-90 or any of these interstates, and you see just as far as the eye can see, you see these big rigs just pulled over, and then that's when it hits you. You go, oh my God, look at that! You know,
absolutely.
So it would be a wondrous event if it occurred. And again, everybody's got to make their own decision. That's
well. And
for
I
sure.
sent you guys. I sent you some. I just said my composer for my movie. He just emailed you a bunch of our songs. And if you could play any of those songs, my friend is an independent musician, and we wrote a bunch of new union songs. And we've got Which Side Are You On?
Oh yeah.
And it would just thrill me to hear you play even just one of those songs, because I have spent a whole year of my life, actually 2 years of my life, on the road trying to get the word out about the union, about taking care of each other, you know.
When did you send that?
He just sent it right now.
Oh,
he's
okay.
All right.
What I'll do is hand it off to Kathy, and by God, we'll work it in. Jack, we got a boogie.
All right.
Stay in touch.
I'm the Paul Revere.
You are indeed. Stay in touch, pal. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 9 minutes before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. He also answered your calls. Billy Foster, who does... I don't know what the hell Billy does. I'm always just supposed to mention him. I don't know. What does he do? I have no idea. Oh, well. Billy Foster. And, of course, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. And Catherine Bay, executive producer of this program. Thanks to everybody for, once again, getting us out there. Back to your phone calls. Bob is calling from Tacoma, Washington, listening on KPTK. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Mike. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
Hey. Yeah, you know, it's great to have you back. You know, you really came back with a bang yesterday. You know what? I mean, unfortunately, since you've been gone, the Republicans managed to sink to even newer depths than they had before. But I think it's actually a good sign because they're showing their desperation here. I mean, I don't know if you're heard, I'm sure you have, but you know, now the number of Republicans quitting Congress is up to 17. I mean, they're instead of running to Congress like it was some kind of Roman orgy, they're running away from Congress like it was some kind of hornet's nest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're hoping to exterminate as many of the locusts as many of the hornets as possible and finally clean up Congress and make it functional for us.
I hope that happens. I really do. I think the Republicans realize that they've had 13 years and they have totally, totally screwed up the country. And a lot of them have, in their minds, haven't screwed up the country. They have rescued the country from that drift into the god-awful clutches of communist socialism or whatever. And their work is done and they can go back to screwing people on real estate deals or insurance policies, whatever they did before they got into Congress as a Republican. But let's always remember one thing. There's an awful lot of people in the Democratic Party who are going to replace these Republican cowards. And the Democrats, some of the Democrats who will be doing the replacing are just as cowardly. And what I think needs to be done is Democrats, let's get as many Democrats in as possible, and then let's start picking them off and getting some liberal Democrats to run against them in the next primary. Some liberal Democrats who are the ones who really determine how well off people are going to be in this country, how cared for, how protected, how they're going to be allowed individual freedom to develop their small businesses or to do whatever the hell they want to do. It's liberal Democrats who do that. It's never, ever, ever Republicans.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, this is just like what my mother was telling me about what the situation was back in the late 60s with the regular Democrats versus the new Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be very analogous to that time, and I was born in the late 60s, so it really seems to have gone full circle back again.
Yeah, There were Democrats who decided that they were tired of losing elections and came up with this DLC, this New Democrat idea, or the Democratic Leadership Conference. And, you know, history can't be changed. One of the people who helped set that up was Al Gore. But I think Al Gore has come to realize on some fundamental level, I'm not saying, you know, he's like Saul on the road to Damascus, but I think Gore has come to realize on a fundamental level how wrong the positions of the Democratic Leadership Conference really were. And now that the entire planet is at risk and in jeopardy, I think Al Gore has had some changes of heart. I hope so, because I'm like I said the other night, I'm on the verge of totally supporting his candidacy, even though he's not a candidate. So, Bob, we're about out of time. Thanks for checking in, pal.
Hey, thank you, Mike.
All right, I appreciate it. Take care. We'll talk again. I think we can squeeze Dennis in here. Dennis is calling from Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dennis.
Hello.
Hey, Dennis. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I just thought I'd give you a call and inform you on that. You guys are talking about the Turkish shutting down. Well, back in 1974, me and Mike Parker from Overdrive Magazine, Ralph Gringo, Bill Hill from The Fash, six of us, Gene Murphy, we shut down the United States. We lost by 6 hours because one thing about independents, they can't stay out of work for very long, you know.
Right.
And if you were to have a shutdown nowadays, considering back then we had about, oh, I'd say 60% independence. And of even of the media, we had very low companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now your companies run at about an average, I'd say about 85%.
Really?
There's only about 15% independence out here.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these guys that call themselves owner-operators are driving a company truck that they got their name on the lease, and that's about it.
Well, go ahead, Dennis.
Second off, these guys that are out here nowadays are what we call three-week wonders. We haven't got that many professionals out here. Most of them don't know how to run a business because they don't get the schooling for it. Anybody that's been out here and have owned their own trucks for a period of time that have a business, a business degree, college degree, they mm-hmm. usually get out of it, see, because they don't see that much money in it.
Yeah, Dennis.
And so they go to something else.
Yeah, Dennis, I appreciate that insight. We're flat out of time here. I understand. I didn't know the number was that high, but I understand independent truckers have become kind of an endangered species. Again, it's an individual call on November 6th. I hope something happens, and I hope that something is nothing. Oh, there we go again. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seeker. Thanks a lot for hanging out with me this evening. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.